Welcome to Inside Out, the Louvre-clad podcast where we explore how Australia's most distinctive facades are inspired, engineered and implemented. If you've ever wondered how ambitious designs make the leap from concept to construction, you're in the right place. In every episode, we'll take you behind the scenes of complex projects, delve into challenges and meet the designers, makers and visionaries who turn bold ideas into iconic facades. Today we're talking to Sue Dugdale, Director and Project Leader of SDA Architecture and Project Lead for the Mbantwa Health Hub, a project where designing with country, environmental performance and social outcomes were deeply interconnected. I'd like to unpack those ideas and how they're translated into real design, technical and delivery decisions. But before we dig into the project, I want to get a sense of your journey and perspective as an architect working in Central Australia. So welcome, Sue. Thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Thanks, Idoa.
You've been based in Alice Springs for over two decades, I believe, and founded your own practice back here in 2000. Can you tell us what drew you to practice in Central Australia and how that continues to shape your work and philosophy today?
I came here for an incredibly short time, in fact, over 30 years ago now. So I came for 2 months and I've been here for many decades. So it's a place with many opportunities and challenges, and it's just a fascinating place. So I just kept on staying. Because I was here, I thought, no, I want to have my own practice. So I started that in 2000.
You've also been engaged with professional leadership and equity and architecture at a national level. What has informed your view of practice and advocacy over the years?
Over many years, I've been on various committees and boards and so on, but really my main avenue for advocacy is through practice and project work. So I try and maximise the value that projects can bring to the community and broaden that value beyond providing a great facility, but whether there's other social benefit that can be provided.
For architecture, it's more than just a building, isn't it? You know, how does it really change people's lives, I think?
That's right. We've tried to create Aboriginal employment through the projects, integrate art, promote sustainability and champion that in the construction industry. That's the kind of things we work on.
When we talk about designing with country on this project, what did that actually look like in a day-to-day design practice and meetings and on-site and, you know, decision-making through the process?
Probably the biggest aspect of that and the way we do it most is listening to people, the people who are part of the project. They're the clients, the stakeholders, the parts, the members of our community. We also do it through respecting known cultural elements and history of the site. In this instance, the site had a sacred tree, which we worked very hard to protect in consultation with traditional owners. And also we do that by understanding the physical site and its qualities and using all our local knowledge to do that. For example, you know, the site is within a flood zone. It's next to the river. That was important. It's both an opportunity to have this beautiful river next to the site, but it's a challenge to protect the site from flooding.
I guess you had early consultation with the Congress staff and they would have influenced the design direction as well. So that's what you're saying. You're just talking to all the people involved. So how did this process shift or deepen later when you collaborated with cultural advisors on the murals?
I'll just go through the layers of cultural advice we had. Yeah. So Congress is an amazing organisation. They've got really strong governance, which massively supported the project and really is fundamental to its success. So Congress is an Aboriginal organisation with a membership and they elect a board to manage the organisation. So we consulted with the board and they made all the key decisions for the project. In fact, they had set the project up in this amazing way before we even started work on it.
Oh, nice.
So they were our key leaders, if you like, and guides on the project. We worked with established cultural issues like the sacred tree I've mentioned has a certificate governing its management. And there's an organisation called ARPA, Aboriginal Areas Protection Authority, that manages that. So we worked with ARPA and the traditional owners to look after the tree and manage that process through the whole of the construction. Congress staff, as you mentioned, were really key to the project. So they could tell us about the functionality that we needed to deliver. But because a lot of them are Aboriginal people, they're also clients of the organisation. So we were consulting both staff and clients at the same time, which was very efficient.
Yeah.
Very good. So you're really understanding what's the purpose of the building, how the building's going to be used as you're designing.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you mentioned the cultural advisors that when we proposed to put artwork on the front of the building, Congress adopted that idea very readily because it serves as a way to demonstrate their values and to give back to the community. And so they have some in-house cultural advisors who guided us in both the content of the murals and what they should be on the building.
I'm interested about with the murals. I believe we didn't end up, you know, with one artist from the community producing that artwork. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, it was a really interesting process because we've put integrated art into projects before. It's always a journey. You don't know where the end is going to be. And so there's such amazing art in Central Australia. I think it's world famous, in fact, and collected in music art galleries around the world. And we thought, what if one of those or two of, we've got two mural sites on the building, what if they were on the front of the building? Wouldn't that be incredible? And so we were very fired up by this idea.
Yeah.
The cultural advisors considered it really carefully, but because the Congress client, they serve all of Central Australia, which involves many Aboriginal people from many areas and language groups. And they realised and advised us that it wouldn't be culturally safe for one or two artists to have their work on the front of the building depicting their country and their story. Congress is a more universal organisation than that and needed to include everyone. What they proposed, which we never would have, was that we create the artwork. Mm-hmm. So we created a graphic and they gave us the content for the artwork. So do you want me to explain?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So the content they proposed for the artwork was to use traditional Aboriginal healing practices and express them in the murals. But the healing practices and traditional healing is a very broad term. In fact, you know, all of life's positive activities make you healthy. Mm-hmm. So they requested that we have the two murals have a man side, which reflected the men's activities and ways of supporting health, and the other side to be women's activities and ways of supporting health. So the men's side depicts things like protection, hunting, creation of shelter, and the women's side is things like collecting bush foods and bush medicines, looking after babies, smoking ceremonies. So when you look at the two murals, you can see all these themes depicted.
Beautiful. And how did you decide on, I guess, the medium for the artwork?
First, there's two aspects to it. One is the graphic that we used. The graphic that we used is what you might do in an art class, and it's, I think, called a continuous line drawing, where you don't take your pen off the paper and you keep drawing, and then that you get the squiggly line effect, but the images emerge out of that.
Yeah.
And I particularly liked that idea because I think the graphic shows how the elements connect to each other and everything's a web of interconnection in Aboriginal cultural life. You know, you don't separate health from environment and from food and from medicine. They're all very connected. So the graphics served that. And then to work out the actual materials, we had to do some technical research. So we liaised with Louverclad closely, who were supplying the louvers, about the base finish on the louvers and what would be suitable. A local sign writer advised us about the kind of paint he recommended. And so we consulted a paint company about their views on it. And with all this advice, we put it together and ended up using just a good quality external acrylic paint.
Right.
In the end.
Wow, it's come up really well.
It has. And I think, you know, we really needed these murals to have a long life. So that was, you know, stand in good stead for the organisation. So that was important.
And so was it always going to be on louvers, or was that something that kind of evolved, or like were these, you know,
The louvers came first.
Yeah. Okay.
Because we did the passive design principles, thermal design of the building. Essentially, the front of the building, the entry of the building, faces due west. Where you want the building to be open and welcoming, we needed to provide the maximum enclosure and shade and protection from the sun. The louvers do that, so they protect that facade from the summer sun, which comes from a different angle to the winter sun. So some winter sun does come in between the louvers, but the summer sun is entirely excluded. And because this is the front of the building, it's a two-story high building. We selected the largest louvers possible, so they're a metre. Each louver is a metre wide.
Yes, they are very big. Yeah. And I guess you would have done shade studies and things to really work out that angle. And
We 100%, yeah. So we work in Revit 3D, and the beauty of that program is you can set it in the exact location and work to exact times of year and exact times of day and know exactly what the sun is doing. So, you know, down to the few millimetres of accuracy.
This healthcare facility, it's a healthcare facility, but it doesn't feel institutional, doesn't it? How did designing with country influence the balance between the strength and welcome and dignity of this building?
The strength of the building, I guess, is its purpose designed from briefing by Congress staff. And so they see their advice reflected in what has now been provided. A sense of welcoming is provided by the murals that we've been talking about. It's demonstrated by the preservation of the tree, which is at the front of the building, and the care that's been taken with that tree. So in combination, the murals and the tree give a clear sense of cultural identity. And then the functionality of the spaces is really important. So the building, although it's all connected, it's divided into two main wings, and connecting them is like a clear glazed atrium that you walk into, and that's the entry to the building. But before you have to go into any kind of door, you arrive in a welcoming, shady courtyard with space for seating, landscaping, where people can wait if they want before entering the building. If they have any cultural avoidance relationships, they can wait in the courtyard and observe people around them and decide whether it's safe, culturally safe to go in. Family members of people going in for some kind of treatment may choose not to go inside at all and might want to just wait in an external environment that's really comfortable. So that welcoming space is, yeah, really important as a starting point for experiencing the building.
I can't wait to see this tree, actually. I'm really interested about this and to see the sacred tree. Is there anything, what is the story behind the tree? Do you know?
I am not privy to the story because it's a sacred tree for Arunda men.
Ah, I see.
And so
see.
Actually the men's and women's mural, the men's mural is on the side near the tree.
Yeah.
But the tree has had an interesting life. So it was treated very poorly by the previous development. And someone at some point in around the year 2000, the entire top of the tree had been cut off. So you imagine a tree with a massive trunk and having its head cut off. Then it grows branches out from the remaining shell, but they're not as stable as the original tree. So we've had to address the structural stability of the tree, get rid of pests, treat fallen branches with respect. Once we demolished the existing building on the site to make way for the new building, the tree was more exposed and suffered a bit in the weather, so we had to do that. The trunk was wrapped at one point to protect it. So it's been a really detailed process of consultation with an arborist and with traditional owners about respecting the tree and treating it carefully.
Do you know how old it is?
No idea, but I would expect it would be over 100 years old.
Wow, yeah. Alice Springs climate, it's obviously quite a harsh climate. Sometimes you get extremes of hot and cold, and the building envelope and shade would have been critical to this project. As you mentioned, you use 3D modelling, etc. with Revit to really look at the thermal performance of the building. When you're looking at these different louvers and things on the building, how does that work into the calculations of that thermal performance?
Yeah, they're a key element in creating a building that works both thermally and for people.
Yeah.
So just as an example, a building would perform better thermally if it had no windows. You know, walls are better than windows in thermal performance, but we're people and we want to have daylight and connect to nature.
Yeah.
And so we design windows, but we design the best windows we can. We use high-performing glass and we really importantly use shade louvers to the exact extent and the exact positioning to keep sun off the glass for the hottest months of the year. So we have a kind of rule of thumb that we try and exclude any direct sun on any glass for 8 months of the year because our climate tends to be hotter rather than colder. But we do compromise where a view or a connection to nature is really important, and then we compromise a bit for the human.
Yes,
of human best.
You definitely have to see. We have to see out to the outside, and especially with that interconnectedness with nature and everything that you need to allow for in this building. The project was actually targeting a 6-star Green Star rating, I believe.
It was. We actually started with a 5-star Green Star rating, and then because we were tracking so well, we realised we were tracking for a 6-star rating. So actually upped the rating during design.
Ah, what was it? Was there any particular milestone that you really realised that it was going to be?
We were just ticking all the boxes. Yeah. You know, our environmental consultants gave us a run sheet of all the aspects that you need to achieve Green Star, which is many things. You know, it's carbon emissions, it's life cycle, it's recycling, it's human comfort, it's air quality, et cetera. And we were achieving on all those fronts. So we thought, great, wow. let's go for 6 stars.
So what aspects of the envelope, like shading and passive design, contributed most strongly to the building's energy efficiency and that Green Star performance? Do you know?
Yeah, it's really hard to say because they do work in conjunction. Yeah. The example of the walls and the windows, you know, you do need the windows. So
yeah,
we start with sort of passive solar design on the site. So the layout on the site is the start of our design process, if you like.
Yeah.
So we look at where north is and how we can achieve passive solar design and orientation.
Yeah.
And then place our windows and place our louvers and our insulation and so on to best effect.
Was there any kind of key precedents or anything that you were looking at when you were designing this building that helped influence some of the design? Or,
you know what, I'd say the precedents are probably our project.
Yeah.
We've had 25 years of working in this environment and with this yeah. community and seeing what works, not sacrificing everything for thermal comfort, so still getting views and comfortable buildings and unique buildings that express the culture of the organisation as well.
Mm.
So we try and balance all those aspects.
Yeah, obviously you've got so much experience, and with the success of this project, it's actually been referenced as a benchmark for how remote projects are managed and rated for Green Star. Is that right?
Yeah, that's been a really interesting journey because Green Star ratings achieved in the city are different to ones achieved in remote areas. So almost every piece of material that's come to this building has travelled a minimum of 1,500 kilometres, if not 2,000 kilometres, to get here. So we've got different criteria. You know, we have more challenges. We don't have the waste recycling that you would find in a larger urban centre. We've got the transport issues. We've got a more extreme climate. We're dealing with a different context. So the Green Building Council was interested in using this project to set a benchmark for how remote projects can be evaluated.
You were telling me, I think, that there was also a PhD candidate from Charles Darwin University who's using this project as a case study.
Yes, that's Deepika Mathur.
Yeah.
She happens to be an architect as well, so she knows what she's talking about. And so she has been working for a while on looking at minimising waste in the construction industry. So we've worked with her in a smaller way on a previous project, but this one we brought her in right at the start of the project and initiated a lot of waste management procedures. So there's been some enormous benefits and initiatives come out of that. So one of the things we did, which we'd never done on a project before, was we required the contractor, who was very willing, they were totally on board with our environmental ambitions, to sell a lot of the demolished products on site. So they set up a little depot or shop on site for a few weeks, and they recorded all the sales, and they sold old carpet, they sold parts of joinery, elements like that from the
wow.
construction waste, the demolition.
That's great. So it's all kind of going back into the community.
Yep. So it's back into the circular economy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then one of the best things that came out of it was the contractor tried to get the demolished concrete, which is a huge part of a demolished building, processed elsewhere, but it was too expensive. So they set up their own concrete crushing facility,
mm-hmm.
Which has now survives the finish of this project. So they're still doing it. They're crushing concrete in the region, and that concrete's available for road bases and pipe bedding and other places where you need gravel. So we see that as a spin-off of the project that's created a huge benefit in the community.
Yeah, that's
and fantastic. For the environment.
Absolutely. Yeah. So looking back, what did this process teach you about the responsibility architects carry when working with culture, performance, and country together?
That's a great question. And it's really key in this project. And there was an absolute key moment, which fortunately I did listen and realise at the time. So I was having a meeting with the Congress board very early in the project, and we started talking about whether they wanted to support a higher environmental and sustainability ratings and put some, you know, it costs more, and they had to put cost and time and effort towards that. And Congress CEO Donna Archie made this comment that healthcare, their Congress is a huge healthcare provider in Central Australia. Healthcare is as much about care for the environment as it is about care for people, because mm-hmm. the two things are interconnected. that's been the underpinning of the whole project, and it gives me goosebumps because it's a simple but a really profound statement. Mm-hmm. And I think it comes from an Aboriginal perspective too about connectedness, and I think it's a great example about how we should practice architecture and even lead our lives.
So what do you hope this project changes for the community, for the profession, and how remote projects are approached in Australia?
There's a few ways to answer that. So I think, I hope the Green Building Council can create a new benchmark for remote projects so that remote projects can aspire to Green Star ratings on their own terms and in the context and the environment in which they're carried out. I think in the local community, the project has contributed hugely to the construction industry. So in the recycling endeavours, the concrete crushing plant that's new, also what came out of the project was a new business creating light steel framing. That's 100% Aboriginal business. It was a spin-off of this project and it continues beyond the life of this project. The project achieved a really high level of Aboriginal participation. So 30% plus of the labour was by Aboriginal participants. And this is a lot, our contractor, Asbuild, a local contractor, I think because they're local, they really care about local issues. And so they've supported and initiated some of these activities. So we're incredibly happy to have had them on board. And for the profession, I think, you know, we always aspire to do better. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
What a fantastic project. And is it up and running? Have you seen how and heard how it's going? And
You know, sometimes people ask me how I see the project now in hindsight, and usually I can't see it for a couple of years. I'm still too close to the trees to see the wood.
Yeah.
But my main takeaway from it is how satisfied the client is and the people who work in the building. I have so many people telling me how happy they are to work in it and that they enjoy it and love it and they feel proud of it. So that's, a fabulous takeaway.
Yeah, what an amazing thing for the community of Alice. Yeah. At Louverclare, we always like to end on the inspiring three. So we believe in creating buildings, facades that inspire the world, like this project. So is there one project anywhere in the world that inspires you or you wish you'd worked on?
Look, there are so many, but I will pick one. So I really love the Bundanan Art Museum.
And I really want to go to that. I haven't been to it yet.
Designed by Kirsten Thompson Architects. That firm does amazing work, and this is a beautiful looking project. I haven't visited it, but I would love to.
Mm.
It just looks like it sits in its environment so beautifully. It looks crisp and simple, but I'm sure it's not. You know, I'm sure it's taken a lot of work to create something so elegant and that sits in the Australian landscape so well. I think one of my ambitions is to create, in working in Alice Springs, is to create a sort of regional identity for here. And I do that through not trying to put a sameness across projects, but treating each project as unique and then seeing what commonality comes out of those. And so I think there's a bit of a mission to do that Australia-wide amongst Australian architects. And I think Kirsten Thompson's a great practitioner, if that's the agenda.
And is there a place or a practice that keeps you grounded during these stressful projects?
Yeah, look, this is also a hard question to answer, but I just have to go to nature, I think, that, when you're standing next to a 100-year-old sacred river red gum, you realise that all these things we create and do in our lives are all temporary, so they don't matter that much. You try and make them good, but eventually, we're small things in a big world.
And is there any person whose advice or example has inspired you in your life? Work?
There's a traditional owner called Doris Stewart, who's an older lady now. She is quite incredible. She's an Aranda traditional owner and custodian, and she's had to carry a huge weight of responsibility, unpaid, for her cultural obligations to look after country. And she's worked so hard at that. She's had to compromise. But she is amazing. She's really strong. So she's an inspiration.
Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure to talk to you.
Same. Thanks, Adana.
For more insights and resources, please head to louverclare.com. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to hit follow. Please join us next time.